Welcome to the CM Finance First Quarter Earnings Release Conference Call. Your hosts for today's calls are Mike Maurer and Anthony Scarry. Operator assistance is available anytime during this conference by pressing star zero. A question and answer session will follow the presentation. I'll now like to turn the call over to your speakers. Gentlemen, you may begin.
Thank you, Operator. This is Mike Maurer, and I'd just like to say good morning, good afternoon to everyone, depending on where you're calling in from, and thank you for joining us. Before I make my remarks, I'd like to ask Anthony Scarry, our interim CFO, to discuss some general information and include a discussion about forward-looking statements. Anthony?
Thank you. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded. Please note that this call is the property of CM Finance, Inc., and that any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by using the telephone numbers provided in our press release announcing this call. I'd also like to call your attention to the customary safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information. Today's conference call may also include forward-looking statements and projections, and we ask that you refer to our most recent filing with the SEC for important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We will not update our forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our website at www.cmfn-inc.com. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back to our Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Michael Maurer.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm going to discuss current market conditions, our investment activity, the portfolio, and strategy before turning the call back over to Anthony to review our financial results. We'll conclude with the Q&A section. As you are aware, the loan, high-yield, and debt markets were strong in the first quarter of the year, with substantial flows into the loan funds, CLOs, middle market funds, and high-yield funds. It's no secret that the conditions in the larger, more liquid capital markets affect the financing markets for all of us in the middle markets as well, albeit not as dramatically. From the beginning of the year, we saw increased leverage multiples, fewer covenants, and lower coupons with generally more aggressive structures. We have responded by being extremely selective in our new investments, remaining disciplined about the kind of loans we are underwriting, focusing our underwriting on credit quality and capital preservation. Despite seeing compressing pricing and lower credit standards in the syndicated market, we have seen a number of attractive opportunities in our core addressable market. We also think that some of the pressure from the larger markets on the middle markets has begun to abate. Recently, we've seen terms starting to tighten back up and pricing starting to widen. Our focus continues to be on sourcing high-quality investment opportunities to build a diversified book with attractive risk-reward characteristics and cash flow yields to support our dividend. Our pipeline is very strong. During our roadshow earlier this year, we targeted net portfolio growth of approximately $25 million per quarter with a range of $25 to $50 million as we deploy capital. We are making very good progress with quality investments. Since December 31, we made 9 investments, including 3 new portfolio companies as of 3/31. We have 19 companies in the portfolio at quarter end, with the total fair value of $227 million. We grew the portfolio by approximately $23 million in the quarter, and that's despite seeing significant refinancing activity, including what had been our largest investment in Endeavor. I want to take a moment to talk about Endeavor. At year end, we had a $38 million investment in Endeavor's facilities. Just prior to our IPO in February, Endeavor refinanced into a new deal. We had a small realized gain on our original investment and reinvested $20 million in the new term loan and LC facilities. Since making the investment, we have reduced our $20 million position by approximately $8 million through repayments and sales with a small realized gain. We have no unrealized losses in Endeavor, and we're comfortable with the underlying collateral coverage. We continue to think that it is a well-capitalized investment and a good return. We have approximately $12 million of loans outstanding to Endeavor today. The unlevered IRR to date over the life of Endeavor, including all refinancings, is 13.18% as of 3/31. As I mentioned, we think that the declining credit metrics and spread compression we saw in the first quarter in the broader market has started to reverse itself. Since quarter end, we closed on three new portfolio investments totaling approximately $45 million. All three were senior secured loans, and the average yield on these new investments was over 10.5% versus the 9.3% yield on all new investments in the first 3 months of the year. Our pipeline continues to support this trend with a number of opportunities yielding between 10 and 15%. Since the end of March, we participated in the refinancing of Benu as well, rolling our $15 million exposure into the new deal for that company. The IRR of Benu as of the refinancing was 10.39%. We're very pleased with our progress since the IPO. We have built a portfolio that will cover the 9% dividend distributions we indicated at the outset as of today. We are well along our way to earning our base fee as of quarter end and continuing to grow from there. As of the close of business yesterday, our portfolio was approximately $264 million. We continue to identify what we believe are attractive opportunities, and we have a great pipeline going forward. We have no loans on non-accrual, and over 99% of our portfolio is invested in debt investments. The weighted average yield is approximately 10.2%, and that's with what we believe is a conservative mix, about 93% senior secured, split approximately 50-50 between first and second lien. Going forward, we plan on staying focused on finding lending opportunities where we see the ability to earn appropriate returns for shareholders with good credit metrics, good structural protection, and sustainable capital structures. Prudent underwriting standards and the preservation of shareholder capital are paramount to us. Finally, our board has declared a dividend of 33.75 cents per share, which will be payable on July 1 to shareholders of record as of June 16. With that, I'd like to turn the call back to Anthony to review our results for the first 3 months of the year, our fiscal third quarter. Anthony?
Thanks, Mike. Our investment portfolio totaled $227 million on a fair value basis as of March 31st. Our net investment income for the period from our IPO date, February 5th, through March 31st was $1.8 million or 13 cents per share. As you know, we declared and paid a dividend of 18 cents per share in March that equated to a prorated 9% annualized yield based on the IPO price of $15 per share. As of March 31st, 2014, our portfolio included approximately 36% first lien debt, 46% second lien debt, 11% senior secured notes, 6% unsecured debt, and less than 1% in warrants. The weighted average yield on our portfolio was 10.17%. Our debt portfolio consisted 90% floating rate and 10% fixed rate investments. Our average portfolio company investment was approximately $12 million, and our largest portfolio company investment was approximately $20 million. Additional information regarding the composition of our portfolio is included in our Form 10-Q that was filed yesterday. With respect to liquidity at March 31, 2014, we had $35 million borrowed under our $50 million revolving credit facility. As of the close of business yesterday, we had no outstandings under the facility, leaving us with $50 million of availability to fund new investments, as well as a cash balance of $12 million. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to Mike.
Thank you, Anthony. One other item of update, we, in our roadshow, talked about an SBA, an SBIC. We continue to work on our application with our outside counsel, Sutherland, and we continue to target end of the year towards the first quarter of next year, hopefully being in a position to have that license. In conclusion, I'd like to reiterate our goals. We're dedicated to providing a steady, consistent dividend with growth to that dividend for our shareholders. We invest with preservation of capital as our foremost concern. We take a patient, disciplined approach to underwriting good capital structures with a focus on both the underlying companies we invest in and the structures of those investments. We think that this is the basis for a strong portfolio that will generate the best returns for our shareholders over the long term. As a point of reference, we continue to target an overall portfolio unlevered yield of 11%. We are at 10.2 as of 3/31. We continue to think there are attractive opportunities. I mentioned the pipeline with several opportunities in the 10 to 15%. With that, operator, can we please open the line to Q&A?
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will conduct the question-answer session. If you would like to state a question, please press star 1 on your phone now, and you'll be placed into the queue in the order received, or press pound at any time to remove yourself from the queue. Please listen for your name to be announced, and be prepared to ask your question when prompted. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phones now. Our first question comes from Robert Dodd from Raymond James. Please state your question.
Hi, guys. On the target yield, obviously the yield in the quarter was down about 10.2 or at the end of the quarter. How long, given your pipeline and the mix in there, a difficult question, but how long do you think it would take you to shift your target, to shift the actual portfolio yield back up to that target yield? And frankly, do you think it's feasible to reach that level given the market environment right now?
Great question, Robert. So I think there's a couple components to that. One is, in looking at our portfolio, you saw an average of about 9.3 for new investments that were going on. That was by design, and what I mean by that is we did not want to stretch for yield and sacrifice credit quality. So I think that goes to your question, is it practical to have the right quality and the right return? During our capital deployment and ramp-up period, we have and we will always veer toward the more conservative from an underwriting standard. What we did there was focus on several investments where we think there is some liquidity and the ability to redeploy that capital into higher yielding opportunities when we're not in a ramp-up phase and we continue to be selective in our underwriting standards. From a standpoint of moving from an average yield of about 10.2 to 11, it depends obviously on the market, the opportunities that we have to invest in, and also, and I think equally important, on the non-voluntary refinancings that happen to our portfolio of some of our good investments, as well as our ability to voluntarily turn over some of the lower yielding good credits that we think we have in there. All that being said, I would say that we should make linear progress between where we are and 11% over the next 6 to 12 months. I think that 6 months would be aggressive, and that would mean we're very fortunate in some of the things we're looking at now that are in this 12 to 16% range. And I think the 6 to 12-month target is a very realistic one, assuming a market that is consistent with the one we're in today and assuming that the pipeline continues to show us opportunities like the ones we have in front of us today. There are over half a dozen opportunities, and I talked about 10 to 15%. I'm looking at our pipeline. The lowest one on there shows a range of 10 to 14. That's probably a 12%. Everything else is 11 to 16%, and they're equally strewn across that spectrum. So I do not think that it's something you'll see us by August with an 11% unless the market changes and gives us an opportunity. That will also have challenges, as we all know, if markets move that quickly.
Okay, great. Thanks. Just following up on some of the details you gave about the portfolio kind of as of yesterday, 264 would say a net $38 million in deployments so far in the quarter. You started the quarter with $52 million in cash, unrestricted, and that's, I guess, where the question comes in. But if that's right, and you started at 52, you've deployed 38, but you've also paid off the credit facility. Can you reconcile that for us? Has some of the restricted cash been freed up, or is that still locked up on the balance sheet, I guess?
You had unrestricted cash of 52 in the 10Q. Today, we have repaid the credit facilities. So today we've got about $12 million plus or minus of cash, and we have zero borrowings under the revolver.
Right, I get that, but I mean that's if you've paid down that much, where did the funding for the $38 million net to grow the portfolio to 264 come from?
We
I guess
have
the numbers don't add up quite to me.
So let me do this slightly different. We have capital of approximately $200 million.
Yep.
We have a term loan of $76.5 million. And we have an undrawn revolver of $50. So at $264 million today, we've got $200 of capital drawn, which is our equity, plus we have $64 million of the term loan being deployed, and we have $12 million of cash on the balance sheet.
Okay, got it. That is unrestricted cash on the balance sheet, correct?
Yes, that is unrestricted.
Got it. Okay, thank you, guys.
Yep.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your phone now. Our next question comes from Greg Mason from KBW. Please state your question.
Great. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for all the details here that you've given us. You know, as we look at the going to the funding side and, you know, potentially growing, can you tell us what your target leverage is on a debt-to-equity basis? And if you had fully drawn the revolver today, the $76 million term plus $50 million revolver gets you to call it 0.6 debt-to-equity. But if your target's around there or a little higher, it would seem you'd need a little more revolving credit facility space. I wouldn't think you'd want to use every single last penny of that. So can you just talk about your target leverage and how you get there?
Sure. Our target leverage is approximately 0.7. And so I think, Greg, you know, great question and spot on as far as all the numbers you threw at me. Our leverage, if we deployed 100% of that, is approximately 0.63 plus or minus, depending on, you know, how you're rounding some numbers there. We've had offered to us additional term and additional revolver. We are in discussions there. We are also in discussions with other parties, including one, about additional non-mark-to-market term financing that is in the 5 to 7 year term, and that would be $50 million plus or minus. So we are looking at several options on ways to either increase our term financing, lowering any type of market risk around it, and increase our revolving credit and extend out those maturities. I would not necessarily expect anything to be finalized during this quarter. I would expect that things around that would take into the end of the third calendar quarter or our first fiscal quarter. And from
okay,
a ramp up and deployment, that works quite well.
Okay, great. And if I think about, you talked about the portfolio can earn the dividend here with where you've ramped up to. You know, in your press release, you gave us kind of the full 3 months of the quarter. You know, part of it was related to when you're private and part of it was related to when you're public. I think, you know, the public was 13 cents a share on a net investment income basis, $1.8 million. You have in there on the private side, you earned $2.4 million. Would it be reasonable to add those two together? So that would be, by my math, kind of a 30-cent quarterly number. Or is there something on the private side where that $2.4 million isn't necessarily apples to apples from when you were public?
Yeah, I think that it's, and we've looked at that, I think that that is a little bit difficult to do an straight extrapolation. There's a little bit of noise around expenses pre being public and some expenses that are, quite truthfully, first quarter oriented that are expenses. They're not organizational costs in the beginning. But the biggest thing affecting that is that our invested assets during the first quarter came into the quarter around $200 million, had payoffs in it that took them down at a low to $150, $160, and then ramped back up to $227. We started the second quarter at $227. We're at $264 today. Our target is to be at $330 plus or minus. And so the level of, number one, leverage that we were using in the first quarter was very low. And number two, not only was the leverage low, but the drag, because $76.5 million of a term loan is sitting there that had cash not deployed, was there also. So it wasn't just lack of leverage. It was leverage plus carrying costs on cash not deployed. We have all but $12 million of cash deployed as of close of business yesterday. So I think that it understates because of principally the lack of use of leverage there.
Okay, great. And then just as you look forward, are there any, you know, kind of sizable or notable repayments that you kind of know about coming down the pike here in the near term?
None that we know about. There, the only thing that we are watching closely as far as our portfolio is that we did see a public announcement that ICA is tendering for one of its bonds out there and that they may be doing a financing. So we've not gotten a notice there, but that's something we're looking at to see whether or not that could come out early. That is expected to be about a 10.5% yield through December. We structured this anticipating that it could come out early. This was a very, very small group. I think there are two or three of us that did this loan. And to the extent it comes out early, it will just ramp up our return. We'll have to redeploy, but you'll see the coupon on that is sub 10. But just to give you an actual number, if it were to come out, call it June 1, the actual IRR will be north of 13%. But that's the only one that I'm watching at this point as far as material activity around the company and financing that they have announced or tenders they've announced in the market.
Okay, great. And then one last question just on the pipeline. Can you give us a sense for, kind of the source of the opportunities, first, sponsored or non-sponsored? And then second, are these more what I'll call syndicated or more liquid loans, or are they proprietary or club deals? Just a little bit of color on, getting to your ability to underwrite, on the pipeline that's coming.
Sure, that's a great question. Thank you, Greg. From a pipeline, and it's an area that, I know I'm not, spending enough time on up front, and probably none of us that do these calls spend enough time giving you clarity. I talked about in excess of six deals that we think are reasonably high quality. Put that in perspective, over the last 5 months, we've looked at it probably about 60 deals that we've said no to, and, we've done, I think, six new investments plus add-ons during that time. In the pipeline that I am most focused on, there's about eight potential investments. There's two of those are sponsored deals. The others are private deals, and there may be one, I think there's two that are public deals, but they're small public deals that have concentrated ownership where we've been introduced or known the principal owners on the public side. They are being sourced through two or three ways. I'd say none of those are what I would call more the broadly syndicated deals, and we do have a couple of those in our portfolio, and you know which ones I'm talking about that have more liquidity and everything else. That's why these are in the 11 to 16% range, because of ability to proprietary source. A big piece of that proprietary sourcing is coming through the team of six that came to us that we had negotiated as a year ago, or last summer is when the negotiations started with Stiefel, to take a group of people that Chris and I knew a lot of the individuals already. We knew their capabilities and their ability to source. These are sourcing directly out to the companies, sourcing to very small advisors or sponsors. And also, and I think very importantly, and this is part of where we are different than a lot of others, sourcing through the Stiefel banking network. And a couple of these are directly with some bankers who have clients that have $10 to $50 million of EBITDA. A couple are looking at small acquisitions, and we are working with them toward that end.
Great color. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you very much, Greg.
Our next question comes from Don Heck from Stephens Inc. Please state your question.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions. And actually, most of them have been answered. And the one I was going to ask was related to the relationship with Stiefel and Cyrus. And it does sound like you are getting some of the benefits of the networking opportunities there. I'm wondering if you go back to the current portfolio, you know, how much has been sourced from that mechanism? And if you look at the pipeline, you know, what kind of opportunities do you have in terms of increasing the direct sourcing from that type of relationship?
John, I'm actually glad you brought back up, because I did talk about Stiefel, but I did not talk about Cyrus. And in the pipeline of eight that I just talked about, there are two Cyrus opportunities also, and those are proprietary to that channel that we would not be seeing without their direct dialogues with companies and follow-ons from, you know, positions that they've currently got. In the current portfolio, we have TNT, which is a Stiefel-generated opportunity, and we have four others between Virgin, YRC, MF Global, and Endeavor, which are all Cyrus-generated dialogue. But the I did not touch on Cyrus earlier, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that continues to be, you know, a flow for us. There's another one that came in this morning that's not in the eight, because I haven't had time and Chris hasn't had time to work with the team around it and figure out if it's in where we would put the same probability weighting as the other eight. But there's a third one that came in today from Cyrus, so that continues to be an important channel to us as we have that great relationship there.
Okay, that's great color. And then you mentioned YRC. If I recall, there were some union, you know, struggles a few weeks ago. Is there any update on that?
Those have all been resolved, and there was a refinancing that we participated in, and that refinancing was basically as part of an overall agreement with the unions.
Okay, great. And then final, you did, I think you kind of referred to some green shoots, seeing some, I don't know, pricing relief, term relief in the market. I wonder if you could, what's the derivation of that? Is this just too early to tell why, if things are shaking out? If so, why are they shaking out? And what things should we be looking for to be, you know, optimistic about pricing relief?
It's a great question, and so I struggle a little bit myself here to try and figure out if it's that the market is giving us relief, and it feels like it is because of the quality of what we're seeing, or are we beneficiaries, and hopefully it's a bit of both, beneficiaries of now that we are up and running and we have the Stiefel team here and we're starting to basically, you know, coordinate and work on all cylinders since February, are we getting the benefit of that team in-house and our coordinated approach to going out and originating through their direct relationships, as well as leveraging the Stiefel bankers? The Cyrus side is working consistent as it has over the last year and a half, but the Stiefel one really is new to the origination effort because we did not have them in-house until we closed the IPO in February. So it's a little hard for me to identify, is it we're doing a little bit better job working as a team or is it the market, or is it a little bit of both? But I will tell you my gut feel is it's a bit of both, because in January, February, March, it felt like we were fighting an uphill battle. Today, it feels like we got a bit of a level playing field. We definitely don't have, you know, clear sailing going downhill, but it's a level playing field.
Level playing field in the sense that you're getting more inbound opportunities where you have more pricing power, or there's just more things to look at, or
level playing field being exactly that we have the ability to dictate price and structure, where it felt like in the first quarter we were losing all that ability, and if we didn't want to play, somebody else would just do whatever they wanted. And so we feel like we've got a lot more opportunities where we've got input around that structure, and so that's why you see us willing to, you know, work on the 11% to 15%, because there are opportunities where we think the credit is better and we've got the ability to structure in structural protections, where when we don't have those, we want to protect shareholder capital, and we will go to higher quality and will not sacrifice underwriting standards for it.
Great. I appreciate the answers very much. Thanks.
Good.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phones now. Gentlemen, at this time, I have no further questions.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time today and dialing in, and just direct you to the website as we continue to post up all of our public information. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for attending.